Hello, everybody. I'm delighted to welcome you to our first ever SHOT podcast today. I'm Victoria Tuckley. I'm the Laboratory Incident Specialist for SHOT. And joining me today is Dr. Shruthi Narayan, who's the Medical Director for SHOT and also a donor consultant for NHS Blood and Transplant, and also Dr. Alison Watt. Now, Alison was our previous operations manager for SHOT, but she is now our human factors expert working on the human factors chapter. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Great. So I'd just like to start off by congratulating Alison. Recently you were nominated for BMS of the Year. Congratulations for that.
Yes, thanks. Actually, it wasn't very recently. It got caught in COVID. So I've been on the shortlist for most of the year, and they only actually made the awards a couple of weeks ago. And sadly, I didn't win, but I was delighted to get down to the last three and be nominated. That's quite impressive at the end of a long career to be one of the top three biomedical scientists in the country.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely an achievement to be celebrated, Alison. With all that preamble out of the way, I think I'm just going to dive straight in and hand over to Shruthi, who's got a question for you.
Oh, thank you, Vicky. So when we reflect back on your journey, Alison, thanks again for joining us on this conversation. What got you initially interested in the human factors principles and ergonomics in that science?
Well, first, thanks very much for inviting me to do this. I'm really honoured, especially being the first. Just going back a bit, Paula, obviously the former medical director of SHOT, was started to get interested in human factors, and she booked a one-day seminar to go to at Loughborough University, and then was unable to go on the day. The seminar was being done by the Clinical Human Factors Group, which is a good group worth checking out. So I went along in Paula's place, as I frequently did in my old job. And I was absolutely fascinated by it. I came back and we chatted and said SHOT really should get involved in this. But we were amateurs, we didn't really know what we were doing. So we looked around for professional help. But the cost of consultancy was just phenomenal. I mean, it's highly in the news at the moment, what consultancy can cost in the NHS. It just wasn't within SHOT's budget. So I had the idea and went back to one of the lecturers that I'd met at this meeting in Loughborough and said, what about if I signed up to do a PhD, would they then help us through obviously the PhD and just generally with their expertise until hopefully a few years later we'd have grown our own expertise. And that's how the whole journey started.
Wow, fantastic. That sounds exciting. And it has actually resulted in completion of the PhD and has fundamentally changed the way we are looking at incidents in hemovigilance. What did you discover in the course of your PhD?
Well, just generally an amazing amount of stuff, because this was a whole new field for me. And I think I see the world differently now. And in particular, the tendency to blame people instead of systems. That's kind of there within all of us. If you think about terrible incidents and things that have happened, maybe something as big as Chernobyl or something like the Mid-Staffordshire scandal, and the first instinct of most people is to go, who's to blame? Who made a mistake? Who did something wrong? And I find myself now automatically, instead of asking who, I ask why. And I say, why did they do it wrong? What made them think whatever they did that caused this was a good idea at the time? Or was it something, you can imagine situations where people are distracted, they're tired, overworked, ill, working above their level, haven't been trained properly, all those things. And if you start looking at the system and the problems with the design, then you start realizing why people make mistakes instead of just blaming the who. One of the good things on this is always to look at, could somebody else make this same mistake tomorrow? And if they could, then it's almost certainly a system design rather than it's down to the individual. And so I find myself looking at problems with a view to design. So just everyday things. A while ago, I had to use a lift on a train platform, And so I wandered up to the lift and I hit the big red button and stood there and waited for the lift, and it didn't come because the big red button was the emergency call for disabled people that wanted to use this lift. And then I realised there was a tiny silver little button next to it, which was the lift call button. So I sheepishly pressed that and felt like an idiot. But the interesting thing was nobody came to my aid. So if I had been a real disabled person, I'd probably be still waiting there. And clearly they were used to people pressing the wrong button. And so they didn't even do their job because they'll just have thought, oh, that's another idiot, pressed the wrong button. But nobody's gone back and changed the design of it. And I think if I went for the biggest thing I found out of the PhD was some of the work I did related around clinical audits and seeing where mistakes might happen rather than looking at incidents where they're about to happen. And what we discovered was in 2/3 of cases, people don't solve the underlying problem. So they realise something's wrong, like those people in the station must know that everybody hits the wrong button. They realise something's wrong and they make some kind of workaround to make the system work. And the classic in transfusion and all of healthcare is your IT system doesn't work how you'd like it to. So you have to do some kind of workaround. One of the examples I found was people that had a single login on the ward, because if people left the computer logged in and it timed out, then it froze the computer for the day and nobody else could use it till they could find the right person to come and unlock it. So they'd got around with it with the most unsafe way of doing things, of just using a generic login. But they'd never gone back and solved the problem. And that's no, I'm not trying to decry the people that did that, but you know, it people do that as workarounds because they feel they can't solve the underlying problem.
Gosh. That's absolutely fascinating, Alison. I think everybody who's listening will definitely have two or three examples in their head thinking, actually, that's something that I do to work around and that's maybe not something that I should be doing. That's really interesting. Thank you for that. Do you have any idea, if you had to think about the future, where you think that human factors would go with transfusion safety in the next 5 to 10 years?
I think SHOT's made a great start, and obviously I'm really pleased with the amount of stuff that I've been able to do, and I'm hoping that people will follow up on that. And I hope it will become an automatic thing to consider human factors principles, particularly when you're investigating incidents or doing audits, looking at the risk of problems and thinking about what's going wrong, or when new systems are being put in or procuring new equipment and things like that. And I hope it would also empower staff to say stop. There's a big thing in operating theatres and things like that about anybody having the right to say stop, this is unsafe. And I think that should go through. And people will have reasons that they can give instead of just saying we don't like being understaffed, we don't like having a computer that doesn't work properly. They can actually point to the human factors principles and say, look, this work can show you how unsafe this is. We don't think we should be continuing with a system that's inherently unsafe. And then because of that, I just hope that in the long term, people will stop blaming others for a mistake that on any other day they could have made themselves. Because generally, almost no one ever goes into work and thinks, today I'm going to harm someone. But it happens to a lot of people. And you would hope that the system will get into a proper just culture and not be blaming individuals, but we'll be looking at why, always asking the question why.
Definitely. I think that that'd be a wonderful thing if that could happen. And Hopefully having resources like this will really help start those conversations. Can I ask you a question, Shruti, if that's okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
What's the impact? Have you seen any impact of human factors on hemovigilance reporting, or do you think that it's made much of a difference so far?
Oh, I think following on from what Alison said, it has actually made a huge change, and it is the beginning of a long journey. I think, starting with incorporation of this HPIT model within SHOT, I think it has changed the conversation. It has changed the lens with which we are actually looking at the incidents that are reported, but it's also changed the way we are conversing as well. So it has also prompted staff at the front line to actually, when they are investigating incidents, can they apply the human factors principle? Now, many may already be doing that. There are different causative contributory frameworks and different HAV frameworks that are actually applied. So I think it is changing the lens through which we are actually looking at when things go wrong. And it is important that it's built into the principle with the just culture and the learning culture and overall improving patient safety. And it is helping us identify the blind spots. It's not just when investigating when things go wrong, but I think it is also useful, as Alison mentioned, and also as we identified in the webinar yesterday as well, that how can we think of the human factors principle in designing the systems? So that, you know, can we be proactive? Can we be predictive in building that safety into the systems? So yes, very definitely, it has actually changed. And please do visit our website, shotuk.org. And there are several resources, including a mini resource about cognitive bias, that is the short bite. And we would have the recording from the webinar and several other resources that are available relating to this. Thank you, Vicky.
Lovely. Thank you very much for that. Thank you for both of you. I hope everybody who's been listening has found this useful and at least get you thinking about where to go to look for more resources on your journey of learning about human factors. So that was really fascinating. Thank you once again. And hopefully we'll be back soon with more information and more short podcasts.